Hello, I'm Trevor Von Eden, co-creator of Black Lightning, DC Comics' first black superhero, and you're listening to Shortbox Showcase. Enjoy.
Thank you, sir.
Hi, I'm Professor Allen.
And I'm Emily, and you're listening to the Shortbox Showcase.
Episode 55, Tidings of Comfort and Joy.
So it is a relatively geeky first, a commentary episode.
It's not exactly a Christmas miracle, but it is a Christmas episode. So we'll be talking about...
or over an episode from one of our favorite animated series ever, Justice League.
Or as Andy Leyland says when he does a commentary, he's going to be yakking over an episode, which doesn't sound quite as good to American ears as it might to his.
I don't know. But it is accurate. So yes. If it's the commentary section that you're specifically interested in, then you can skip ahead to about the 33-minute mark. Yep. We talk for a couple minutes about the episode and the series, and then we get right to the episode itself around 35.
But first, a little feedback.
On episode 54, last episode, we talked about some of the great comic book creations of Jack Kirby. Or as Sir Martin of Grey rightly pointed out, co-creations of Jack Kirby. What a fascinating episode. And it's good that you went for creations rather than characters, allowing for the likes of Kirby Dots.
I can't remember whose idea that was, but it was pretty good. And I think we both grabbed a couple of non-character creations.
Yeah, concepts, objects, general cool stuff. Sir Martin does think that we might have given a little bit too much credit to Kirby. The character of early Magneto, for example, was surely almost all Stan Lee. And I've never been convinced that the Martin Luther King, Malcolm X parallels were in the X-Men until Claremont came along.
It's possible.
Ditto with the idea of the X-Men as proxies for an outsider group of whatever variety.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be a narrative that was retroactively added, with even Stan Lee professing to believe it in later years.
We actually do have feedback coming up of someone who claims that they've probably never read an original Jack Kirby story, but what they've read is how other creators have taken his concepts. And so he has favorite Kirby characters, though he's not sure he's actually ever read a Kirby comic. And I think to some extent that is what we're dealing with. Part of it is talking a little bit about his influence as well.
Yes, and I will admit something that... I think you talked about some on Quarterbin 100. We're not really X-Men people. Everything I know about it pretty much comes from the cartoon series. As far as...
We're not experts, we're just family.
Basically. especially when it comes to the X-books.
That is true. But the good thing is, X-Men fans, generally speaking, laid back, calm. They don't get upset. They're not passionate. They're not... Oh, never mind.
The good Sir Martin continues. But yeah, Barda is fantastic. I think we can end the email right there.
There you go. Boom.
He says, I've never been a fan of the Black Panther. His look was kind of boring. The tiny cape added interest on occasion, and his nobility made for a rather humorless chap. But I love what he stood for as the best of men from a nation reaching for the future. And as for Dr. Doom, he's hilarious.
Yes.
So who should Martin pick? He says, I do love the Warriors 3. Kirby's visual either perfectly captured Lee's character descriptions or informed the personalities he gave them. And over at DC, the nurturing technology of Motherbox was pure wonderment.
Yes.
Keep up the great work, Martin.
Thank you, Martin. Shortly after the episode came out, the very polite Matt Ev commented, Emily's number one made me so happy. I, too, am a huge admirer of said character who I feel is sorely underused. Great to hear some love being hurled their way, carefully sidestepping all spoilers for the benefit of those who have yet to listen. Isn't that sweet?
I just love hearing all of the Barda supporters coming out of the woodwork.
Yes.
There was also an early comment from Paul Hicks of Waiting for Doom.
Is he related to Paul Hicks?
I think maybe. I'm stopping the podcast before I get to Professor Allen's number one. I think I know where this is going.
Am I that predictable, really? Really?
I mean...
Yes?
You're a passionate man of a few very specific loves.
And Doc Doom be one of them.
Most of them.
We also heard from our old buddy Mike Laughlin, who sent in his own top 10. Dear Professor Allen and Emily, it's hard not to write a multi-volume book series when writing about Jack Kirby. He's the Beatles and Elvis of comics. Not or, I said, and. I just finished with your most recent short box showcase and your Kirby tribute made for fun listening. Of course, every concept you mentioned triggered a novel worth of feedback in my brain. This is Kirby, after all. The most important and beloved figure to ever shape our favorite medium. In order to keep this email to a reasonable length, I'm only going to leave a sentence or two or three about my top 10 favorite Kirby characters, with a few exceptions.
That exception is going to be number one. We all know it. Number 10, Mr. Miracle.
The outfit shouldn't work, but it does. Being a super escape artist should be kind of a boring shtick. Aren't all superheroes escape artists at one point or another? But it's not. The fact that Scott Free is such a great character is the real miracle.
Number 9, Beast.
I don't care much for the original 5 X-Men, but Hank McCoy being a genius in an ape-like body works brilliantly.
I think I said in the episode that genius scientist trapped in monster body is probably my favorite Jack Kirby trope.
Yep.
He just does it so well.
There you go.
Number 8, Darkseid.
Is the scariest villain ever. He wants to destroy all free will. That's mind-bogglingly evil. And it hits a little too close to home when you look at human history.
Number 7, Silver Surfer.
How does an Academy Award statuette surfing through space look majestic? It's a good question.
Answer, Kirby.
Jack had a knack for making the ridiculous look awe-inspiring.
See also Galactus.
There you go.
Number 6, Magneto.
What Emily said. Also, he was the actual headmaster of the Xavier Institute for a few years in the 80s. He operated the school under the name Michael Xavier. So he counts.
So he counts
as an X-Man.
We had a X-Man.
Also, New Mutants 35-40 is one of my favorite stories and one of my favorite series. Even making a Secret Wars 2 crossover work, that one I'm going to have to read to believe.
Yeah. Number 5, Black Bolt.
My favorite Kirby design ever.
Black Panther.
What Professor Allen said.
Number 3, Doom.
All hail Doom.
Number 2, Big Barda.
What Emily said, especially the Wonder Woman comparison. She's my favorite superheroine.
Yeah.
Yes!
And number 1, The Hulk.
Science explains how nature works and how humanity achieved many of its greatest accomplishments. Children are taught that scientific knowledge is useful and necessary to understand the world, and learning how to use and expand such knowledge is a noble goal. We don't tell children about the dark side of science. It's part in developing weapons of fear and war and death. Jack Kirby saw the consequences of science without morality. He took Frankenstein and Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and made them relevant to the Cold War. He and Stan Lee threw some potent armchair psychology into the mix. A weak man's repressed anger, a child's guilt, a general's obsession, a climate of fear and paranoia. The Incredible Hulk, number 1, is one of the best and most effective comics of the Silver Age, until you get the last third of it, and there's some nonsense about a Russian with a big head. Anyway, but unfortunately, even Jack and Stan had trouble making a rage monster a viable protagonist. The seeds of the character's success were there. In fact, they carried through to a live-action series that made a 5-year-old a lifelong fan. I'm not going to defend the whole TV series from an adult perspective, but child me loved it unconditionally, even though he found the title character a little scary. Eventually, I discovered Peter David's Hulk comics, which made me a fan of comic books in general. From there, I read Len Wein, then in Defenders, I got Steve Gerber, and then Bill Mantlo introduced the idea that Bruce Banner was an abused child, giving an explanation for the Hulk's rage. Peter David redefined what could be done with the character, including stepping up the humor and psychoanalysis. Greg Pak, Gil Kane, Herb Trimpe, Sal Buscema, John Byrne, Todd McFarlane, Dale Keown, and tons of other great artists made the character look powerful and intimidating. What I love about the Hulk goes back to Jack Kirby mixing a science fantasy with a cautionary tale of humanity's darkness. The Hulk has always been my favorite Kirby creation. Thanks for reading this, Mike Laughlin. P.S. Sorry about the length. I swear, I cut entire paragraphs before sending this.
And I believe you. Whenever we have a chance to talk about our favorites, length is meaningless.
Absolutely. And yes, Scott and Barda are pretty awesome, no doubt. I can't believe that we didn't include any of those original X-Men, but again, blind spot really for both of us.
Yeah, just complete lack of knowledge, awareness, interest.
I thought, is it just an oversight on our part? Maybe. I like to think of it as a testimony to just how much awesomeness Kirby created that we could list top tens without including those characters and still have a viable list.
You know, I know you said Captain America because, I mean, you gotta. He's Cap. I do kind of wish that we had managed to create a top 10 list that included neither an Avenger nor an X-Man.
We came close. We came close.
Following up after the longest piece of feedback that we got, Matthew Smith had just three words to say, love Big Barda.
Hard to argue with that. Concise, direct,
accurate. Patrick Delmore from the Star Trek podcast, Next Generation's First Generation, called us out on one of our joint selections. Much as I dislike it, I have to tell you guys that Kirby took the design for the demon whole cloth from a Prince Valiant strip by Hal Foster. The reason Etrigan's face looks the way that it does is that it is a dismembered duck, complete with a beak for horns and webbed feet on the sides.
You know, now that he says that, the webbed feet on the sides is actually pretty obvious. I'm not so sure about the beak for horns, but maybe.
I will never be able to unsee that image. I think it is just a testament to Kirby's creative eye.
Hello!
That he could be inspired by anything. The highly caffeinated Clinton Robison also wrote in with his top 10. Professor Allen and Emily, I can't really argue why any of your picks shouldn't be in the top 10, mostly because it's your list and not mine. However, I'm betting I will have an easily argued about list. Here it is anyway.
Honorable mentions, which is kind of cheating. But anyway, we don't judge.
Number 12, Morgan Edge. This character has been an incredible non-superfoil for decades. Easy pick.
Not bad.
And Manhunter, picked not so much for what Kirby did with the character, but what others built up using the tools that Kirby gave them.
And I think that is an ongoing thread that we're seeing. Number 10, tie.
Wait, okay.
Two honorable mentions and a tie for 10th. Look, Clinton, we love you, buddy, but come on. This is ridiculous. I mean, just because our top 10s had dozens and dozens of
characters
involved.
You know?
Okay, I'll let it go. Number 10's Guardian and the Newsboy Legion / Boy Commandos.
Okay, so I'm not even going to read the comment yet because we all know that I thoroughly disagree. But here is his defense. These characters were all pretty successful at the time and all eventually became an amazing part of the post-crisis Superman mythos.
I do think they were never better than in that late 80s, early 90s triangle numbering period of Superman. That part I can agree with. Let's move on.
I would have no information, just a lot of opinions. So I will step back on that one.
Oh, so you're a podcaster.
Maybe.
Number 9. Commandy.
Literally the last human boy in a post-apocalyptic scenario, not unlike Planet of the Apes. Continues to live on to this day through direct references like Commandy Challenge and homages like The Only Living Boy. I also really like Commandy. If we had cheated more than we did, he probably would have been my honorable mention.
If we had gone full Clinton?
Yes.
Okay. Number 8. 90% of the well-known X-Men villains.
Seriously. When somebody talks X-Men villains, they probably mention at least 3 Kirby creations. Magneto, Blob, Quicksilver, Scarlet Witch, the Sentinels, Blob. Alright, so 2 of those probably get mentioned as heroes these days.
True.
But the fact that the characters are still popular with audiences should prove why they need to be on this list. Except for maybe the Vanisher.
Number 7. The Silver Surfer's surfboard.
I originally wanted to list the surfer himself, but you guys said everything that needed to be said. However, I am listing the board here. Why? Because of Kirby's reason behind creating it. He simply got tired of drawing all these elaborate spaceships every single month, and instead found a great workaround that made this character iconic.
Necessity is the mother of invention.
And laziness is the creator of classic design.
Number 6. Etrigan.
For all the reasons you addressed, and more. Next.
Number 5. Dr. Doom.
Doom only wants your love, eternal devotion, and servitude.
Hello!
And amidst all that, he is also humble enough to allow himself to be placed here on this list.
True.
Although I may have been talking to a Doombot, or maybe Christoph when I asked. Better move along quickly.
Number 4. Thor and his amazing friends.
Without Thor, we get no Sif, no Loki, no Odin, no Warriors 3.
Second shout out to the Warriors 3.
They would have been number 12 on my list. No Asgard, no Jane Foster, and yes, no Dr. Donald Blake. Kirby-era Thor, while constantly needing lessons in humility, possessed a certain humanity that wasn't always present in the other later versions. Plus, I always need a certain amount of Warriors 3 in my comic book life. Fandral, Hogan, Volstagg are just amazing.
Number 3. The Superpowers comics and character redesigns.
The 3 limited series that DC did of Superpowers comics are just plain fun to read. They are simply Bronze Age adventures of the DC universe without restraint. And most of the redesigns for the Fourth World characters are top-notch.
Number 2. Captain America.
Sentinel of Liberty, spanning 2 centuries. Nuff said.
Number 1. Fourth World in its entirety. Jimmy Olsen and Forever People included. Bold, Clinton. Bold.
Predicting our comments, Clinton says, I bet you're expecting a defense of Olsen and friends here. And while I can't produce one that would hold up in a court of law, nor court of comics, aside to say that whatever Jack Kirby touches, he makes better.
Okay. There's something there.
A fair point, but I will not concede to it. The entire Fourth World saga is so vast and epic in scope that it not only required 4 books at DC to tell, but also expanded into part of Marvel's Eternals. You don't like the Forever People? There are only 2 words that I need for my argument. Beautiful Dreamer. As the irredeemable Shag would say, well, I think we all know what he'd say. To say that Fourth World as a whole is Kirby's sketchbook or collection of notes is like saying the Silmarillion is Tolkien's ideas scribbled into nonsense that only the most dedicated fans can decipher. You know, that might be apt.
There's a connection.
After all, Tolkien fans really do love the Silmarillion, and Kirby fans should have no problem loving the Fourth World, Jimmy Olsen and Forever People, optional.
Thank you.
So there, that's my list. Feel free to destroy it or wait for other nastier individuals to do so. Keep up the wonderful discussion, and here's hoping for the Amazing M Show, or whatever it is going to be called, appearing soon. Sincerely, the consistently caffeinated Clinton.
Not so sure about putting Olsen and the Forevers in number one, even when you put a disclaimer in there. But I'll put that off to the caffeine coursing through the man's system. Old School Ross had some thoughts about our Kirby countdown. Kirby Crackle on the list is music to my ears. Also, being a fellow proud comics cheapskate, our comics enjoyment is not value dollar based.
As the irredeemable Shag would say, not she's hot. Find your joy.
My favorite from the King is Omak. To me, he's Cap, who would be high on my list, maybe number two, in a dystopian sci-fi future. Cap was a product of the 40s, and Omak is a product of the 70s, with its particular societal fears. Plus, you have to love Omak's amazing mohawk. More of Kirby's hair and headdress skills there on display, as we pointed out. The mohawk evokes the lone Roman centurion fighting the legions of evil. Ross also commented how intrigued he's always been with Darkseid's quest for the anti-life equation, which you talked about.
Compelling. Horrifying. And then we're off to the feedback sent in by fine feedbacker and loyal listener. We call him Professional Buzzkill, but he calls himself Nathaniel Wayne. I wrapped up your Kirby Countdown episode, where I feel the need to make a confession of something that didn't actually occur to me until about halfway through.
Yes, it was Nathaniel. Okay.
I don't think I've ever actually read anything done by Kirby himself.
Mm-hmm.
Read a metric crap ton of characters he created, pretty much every comic reader has, but I don't think I've done more than glance at a few reprinted pages of the man's actual work. I will leave my geek card at the door on my way out. But even with that shame hanging over me, I had a great time listening to this episode. Props for the Lockjaw shout-out, whose inclusion in the Inhumans TV show was the only reason that I suffered through the pilot. I also have some thoughts on each of your top picks, and ones you probably aren't going to like. Yes, the Buzzkill signal was flashing in the sky, and I responded. I have very little direct knowledge of Big Barda, which is my issue and not hers, to be sure. Unfortunately, that means one of the few vivid memories I have of the character is the first thing that springs to mind. The time that John Byrne had the villain Sleaze have her and Superman make a porn together. Probably something most Barda fans would rather forget. Superman's fans too, or anyone with eyes and a moral conscience. Good God! Why did you mention the evil Nathaniel? Possibly the worst comic ever made? Because there are things that are drawn worse. And there are things that are written worse. There are few comics more disgusting than that one. If I could launch every copy of that comic into the sun, I definitely would.
Let's move on from Sleaze to someone much more generous, kind, and benevolent. A much better topic.
A low bar, but Victor Von Doom does...
Wait a minute.
...does clear that bar.
As for the honorable and benevolent Victor Von Doom, PhD, I have to chastise the professor for... Oh, sorry, this is Nathaniel.
Right.
Okay, yeah. God, now it all makes sense. For what I think is a glaring omission when talking about Kirby building the character. And that's his face. Exactly what was behind that iconic mask is a matter up for some debate depending on what one chooses to consider canon. Kirby's own interpretation is direct from the man's mouth, and it says everything about Doom as a character. His only disfigurement, to Kirby, is a single scar on the right side running down the cheek to the jaw. One line. That's all. But Doom's a perfectionist. Therefore, any imperfection is inexcusable, and in the case of his face, it must be concealed. Yeah, I know that this was clearly a retcon on Kirby's part since early appearances made it clear that other people were repulsed by his face too, but he obviously came to understand the character better as time went on. And Marvel these days gets to have its cake and eat it by suggesting that it was only a single scar until he put on the mask before it finished cooling, and it made the damage exponentially worse. But I still think I prefer Kirby's take that even now, that's the only thing wrong with his face. Terrific work as always. Geekily yours, Nathaniel Wayne. P.S. If you haven't Googled Big Barda cosplay.
And I have.
I recommend that you do. It seems to be one of the go-to tall woman cosplays, along with She-Hulk and Brienne of Tarth. Personally, I blame those Tibetan monks for the whole face-melting thing, but maybe we don't need to go there right now.
Okay? Perhaps not. You know, you're not actually on Doom's legal staff. Like, you're doing all of this pro bono. You realize that, right? Like,
it has kept you and your mom protected for all these years. That's all I'm saying.
Fair point. Iowa's Joe Crawford reported that he paused in his listening, admitting he was nervous about what our countdown would actually contain. I know what a Doom homer Professor Allen can be. Thank the Lord for M. She kept me from throwing my iPod at the proverbial wall. Enjoying very much, and we'll get back to it soon.
You know, I'm sure in the prior 54 episodes, lots of people have had that same thought. Iowa's Joe, for actually being brave enough. I agree with that. I mean, I told him that my first draft of Top 10 was Doom, his mom, Kristoff, and my 7 favorite Doombots. So just be thankful. You know, out of respect for non-Doom loyalists, I only included him once.
That's very fair. And I just want to point out, Jack Kirby did not, in fact, create "All Hail the Power of Doombot." Like, that was from the cartoon. Doesn't count.
Minor technicality. Minor technicality.
But then he did follow up with his own top 10, as pretty much everyone did. I love getting to hear two great friends talking about comic books. Aww.
Isn't that nice?
So here are 10 Kirby creations I love in loose order, except possibly for my number one. Number 10, Lockjaw.
Yep.
9, MODOK. Mm. Number 8, Machine Man. Number 7, Devil Dinosaur. Number 6, Captain Victory.
Interrupt just for a moment to say that some issues of Captain Victory are on the quarter bin short list for Kirby episodes. Coming up in 2018, thanks to my good friends, the Quarterbins, at the Akron Comic Con.
Well, there you go. Keep an ear out. Number 5, Barda and Mr. Miracle.
Seems a little low, but...
But I appreciate the shout out, I know. Competition is stiff to get on this list. Number 4 is Groot.
Yeah.
Number 3, Fin Fang Foom.
He just wanted us to say that.
Yeah, I think so. Number 2, Darkseid.
Okay, again.
And number 1,
hard to argue.
Ben Grimm, The Thing.
You are not alone in your Grimm love.
Nope. Yeah, because Joe and I have good taste.
Sir Martin of Grey was confused about a few things that you said in this episode. And I think those may have been combinations of generational and geographical differences. Emily's reference to Grimace had me feeling extra thick. Google helped me with that reference, which seemed to be a premillennial McDonald's U.S. thing.
Yes, that's just that's part of the fast food American subconscious.
Then I was Joe and Sir Martin. They had a twit-versation about something else you said in the episode. Sir Martin wanted a definition of OC, as in, Ben Grimm is Kirby's self-insert OC. And then after bemoaning his ability to be down with the kids, he guessed original character?
That is correct.
I was Joe. Expressed then his sort of basic philosophy of internet searches. When in doubt, Google. When still in doubt, Urban Dictionary. So he reported to Martin that according to the Urban Dictionary, this is an original character created by the author. They may be totally made up or based on a living person. Is that what you were driving at, Em?
Yes. Now, specifically the term OC and original character, in fanfic circles
refers
to a non-canonical character, a character that you made up and inserted into the world that is very similar to yourself. Gotcha. So you can get that.
So this was
that living through the world vicariously with this character because Ben Grimm is big, loud, Jewish, softy. It's Jack Kirby. If you look at Ben Grimm,
he smokes a stogie.
He smokes stogies and wears oversized coats and fedoras. He's Jack Kirby. That is what that was in reference to.
Thank you for clarifying. Thank you, Sir Martin, for raising the question. Yes. Because we have to remember, some of our listeners come from very strange lands.
Like the 1980s. So shout out to everyone on social media that gave us some love. Some we've already mentioned, but also Nicholas Prom, Tom Panarese, Gene Hendricks, Joe Crawford, Luke Giaconetti, Pat Sampson, Vera Wild, Ed Moore, Karen from Between the Pages, Al Sedano, Noel Thingvall, Mike Lane, Mike Carlisle, Mike Zumo, other people named Mike.
Probably Mike Bailey and Mike Bradley are in there somewhere. And I would just, it would just make sense. So probably.
Likely, Paul Matthew Carr and Jared West. Thank you all for listening and for sharing your interest with others.
Let's take a break here, and when we come back, it'll be a very Justice League Christmas.
Sawate. My name is Stella, and I am the host of Backroll to Oracle, the Barbara Gordon podcast. Backroll to Oracle is a podcast dedicated to Barbara Gordon, the first woman to hold the mantle of Backroll for an extended period of time, roughly 1967 to 1988. The goal of Backroll to Oracle is to examine the character's history from her first appearance as Batgirl and continuing through her tenure as Oracle. Each episode looks at a vintage issue of Detective Comics or Batman, as well as other books like Justice League and Freedom Fighters, and modern issues of Batgirl and Birds of Prey. I also keep track of news involving Batgirl and other members of the Bat family, and I have a revolving series of segments like Babs in the Tube, which highlights appearances of Babs in TV and film, Shipper Spotlight, which looks at a variety of comic and pop culture couples, gives their history, and determines whether they are hot or not, Reading with Stella, which could be described as an audio drama, or just me reading a book that relates to Babs or doesn't, and of course, the mainstay literature recommendation. I have been blessed to interview writers Scott Beatty and Chuck Dixon on their Batgirl Year One work, Brian Q. Miller on his Batgirl run, Dwayne Swierczynski and Christy Marks on their separate Birds of Prey work, and the creators and actors of the Batgirl Spoiled, the web series. I hope to interview more creators and actors in the future. My goal, most importantly, is to make a fun, entertaining, and thoughtful show that people enjoy and from which they learn. Find the show online at thebatmanuniverse.net and iTunes, and follow the show on Facebook and Twitter at Batgirl to Oracle. Thank you, and fly on, Babs lovers.
And we're back.
Today we're going to be talking about an episode of the Justice League cartoon that ran from 2001 to 2004. And you might have actually seen this last year on Darkness to Light. We did a countdown of our top favorite...
It wasn't Christmas specials.
Our favorite Christmas specials, and a lot of them were sort of underrated from less watched TV shows, sort of obscure. And this was like number three on the list. I love this. It's one of my all-time absolute favorite episodes of one of my favorite TV shows.
Yeah, I was thinking this cartoon was probably pretty close to your introduction to the Justice League, if not actually. A couple of comic books here and there, but this was certainly your first deep dive into these characters.
I got some of my early comics when I was probably 7 to 9, but this TV show hit me at the perfect sweet spot of 10 years old, where I was just ready to delve into a fandom.
And we are talking about Comfort and Joy, which was the 21st episode of the second season, or the 47th episode overall, originally aired on December 13th, 2003. And this was the show's only standalone half-hour episode.
Yes.
I actually heard Michael Bailey and Andy, I think, talking about that. The fact that in the hour block, they played Comfort and Joy and then picked up some other half-hour episode.
Really? Of something else.
I can't remember exactly what they said, but they had pointed that out, that it was outstanding, odd in the sense that it was only a half-sized episode, if you will.
Yeah, that makes sense. Justice League was pretty famous for its two,
right,
three, four, and five-part stories.
And we thought this was just the right episode for our first ever commentary track.
So please be kind. We're trying. Everything we're doing, we learned from Stella.
That's not that. Ooh, well.
So bear with us.
Remember, it's only like 22 minutes. So I think we can handle this. I think you can handle this.
Yes. So just to make sure that we can all sync up together, we are going to be starting right from the end of that beautiful CGI, super epic intro sequence that I love unabashedly even a decade later.
We have faded to black, and we're about to fade into
the title sequence.
The title sequence and so forth. So, you ready for the countdown?
I think so.
3, 2, 1. Hey! Great score. Great music, by the way.
Oh.
I mean, I guess that goes without saying to animation geeks, but...
But it's worth noting.
We do have a nice snow-swept Christmas-ish.
Yeah, Christmassy, maybe less so in the actual actions of what are going down, in that there is a horrible catastrophe,
yes,
looming upon an alien world. But of course, the Justice League is here to help.
And the aliens need help. Are super cute.
Yes.
They look like they could be. They look like they would fit in a stocking.
Yeah.
So
they could. They could be a Star Wars tie-in toy. I could buy that. So the whole team working together to, you know, assemble some science-y nonsense using all their powers.
It's got super team, super teamwork, super powers.
In John Jones's case, super delegation.
Yep. Yeah. Hey. Just keep beaming those instructions into my head, John. I should have this baby up and running right about. And you know why it works together so well? Because they're super friends.
Oh, it's true.
Except Batman's not there. Anyway, we'll get to that in a second, I think. I think that is brought up. We have the Magnificent Five. So this is Martian Manhunter, Superman, Flash, Jon Stewart, and Hawkgirl.
Yes.
As our cast of five heroes. They are kind of cute.
There's a weird-looking crab brain octopi. And at last, they have beamed away the moon, so it's not going to crash into the alien planet. And instead... Now that that's taken care of, everyone can enjoy a snow day.
So what is the Justice League's Christmas holiday pay vacation policy? All we know is that they are taking some time off. So I guess they all had that time off, which I guess Batman didn't.
He had
taken his off earlier in the... Matches Malone convention? I don't know.
I mean, we all know there's always that one guy at work who takes everybody else's holiday hours. I think Batman is always that person. I can relate. I am also always that person.
Black Friday is always a work day for you.
Yes, it is. But of course, John Jones doesn't really have anyone to spend it with. So for him, what's the point of the holiday?
Exactly.
Well, Clark's going to help him out with that one.
And Four Important Words, written by Paul Dini.
It's all you need to know.
So our heroes have headed off for their vacations, but John and Shayera have stayed behind.
Yeah, and we're going to have a little cross-cultural moment in winter holidays.
Now, you mentioned that you've already done a commentary before with Batgirl to Oracle.
Right.
So I have to ask the Stella question. Do you ship these two?
Oh, God, yes. I ship it like FedEx. I think they're adorable, and I think that this episode does a really good, like, job of showcasing that. Especially when you get to see Jon Stewart sort of like relax, make some snow angels.
I like
angels.
Him making a snow angel, and
she has wings.
She's not really impressed.
Yeah.
Well. Not impressed with the wings, but... Snowball. Snow fight.
Super snowball fight.
When one of the great warriors in the universe says it's time to have fun, be scared.
Be afraid, because the snowball fight is going to get pretty extreme.
He'll be here any minute. Then we flash over to Central City, where the jolly man in red makes his annual
appearance at the orphanage.
Flash!
Merry Christmas, guys. Have you been good this year?
You can bet they have they been good this year?
Well, yeah. Don't forget the good enough.
But he comes every year. Isn't that sweet?
It is. That's a thing that showed up a few times in the comics. Mm-hmm. Recently in the New 52, there was in the DC Rebirth holiday special, he did this
That's
as well.
Right.
So I like this being a universal constant. Whoever the Flash is and mm-hmm. whatever the world is like, he always brings toys to the kids on Christmas.
And this year what they want is DJ Rubber Ducky.
You know, for the most part, this episode is a timeless holiday classic. But this is just the definition of none more 90s. What is cool?
I don't...
What's cool? Ducks? Farting? Rapping?
Let's do this. I can't remember you growing up ever needing the hot toy in a year. I don't remember a Tickle Me Elmo that you needed or whatever else it was. Maybe it helps that we were always a couple years out of date.
I mean, it
does. Out of step. Help. Oh, Smallville!
Yeah, something that much more resembles our holiday traditions. Back home, it's Smallville. Going to visit Mom, Pa,
only,
on the farm.
Only Ma Kent would think that Clark is
skinny.
A little thin. Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Kent. I hope I'm not intruding. Clark brought a buddy. He brought a work buddy. Space work buddy.
My name is Jean. I'm a Martian.
Love this.
Oh, we're no strangers to aliens.
We are no strangers to aliens.
Is that your favorite line?
That is pretty
I think
great.
It's probably your favorite line. As long as she's not here, you can have her room. Love the little shout out
room.
To Supergirl. You can stay in the teenage girl's room with the NSYNC poster.
Nice and cozy. Which are words I'm not sure the Martian Manhunter has ever said. I can just
relax and be myself. You know, I love this episode for so many reasons. 90% of them involve Clark. And just his, you know, explaining, I like coming home on the holidays because I get to be myself. He doesn't have to be Clark Kent at the Daily Planet. He doesn't have to be Superman. He doesn't even have to be Clark on the Watchtower. He doesn't have to be the leader of the Justice League. He's just home for Christmas, hanging out with his family.
Now, before we get back to the most awesome snowball fight in history.
Yes.
Was that Streaky? Or was that Jethro?
It was a mean cat of some variety. Poor Jean. Can't catch a break. And neither can John.
I mean, what do we say? Strongest weapon in the universe versus greatest warrior in the universe? It's going to be a pretty fair fight.
It's going to be pretty intense.
Hey, that last one was uncalled for, by the way.
I just love how much John gets to cut loose in this episode and just enjoy frolicking in the snow and trying to get Shiera to cut loose a little bit too.
Exactly. And then when now he's about to, which is a problem.
But. Yeah. Well, now that he's shared his traditional end of the year holiday traditions, now it's time for her to share too.
You know, one of the most important things in our premarital counseling from now 31 years ago,
yes,
was family differences and holiday differences. How you're having to integrate two families' worth of traditions. So that is what poor John
and Shire
poor
are Shire
attempting,
are attempting
to do, while poor Flash is attempting to find the Beanie Baby, Tickle Me
Elmo.
I mean, DJ
Stretch Armstrong.
This could take a little longer than I thought. I like that he was faced by an angry old man mob.
Yeah.
Because grandparents looking for the right toy, you don't want to mess up.
You don't want to mess with them.
It's gonna be pretty. Those can be pretty tough. Now I love the fact here that Flash goes right to the source, which is the North Pole. Oh, it's
okay, Japan.
Okay.
Yeah. Now there
that's pretty awesome.
And there is a moment where you think, Flash, you're just gonna gate crash an empty Fortress of Solitude.
That was pretty awesome. Head straight to the factory in Japan. And then among your favorite moments. Guy was crazy for Christmas. We used to wrap his presents in lead foils, so it couldn't be. No.
Santa wrapped those presents.
Because of course Clark is a Santa man. Of course he is.
And John
just very confused.
Just so baffled.
We might actually have that mug. I think I grew up having that mug of the head of Santa.
That's not impossible. Can I also just say I love that Ma Kent knits spare sweaters just because someone invariably is going to show up like a bedraggled cat on Christmas Eve.
And it may well be someone of triple XL size.
That too.
And then wait, in the great tradition, as he puts the sweater on, what happens to his cloak and to his cape? They magically disappear.
Well, yes.
Now, of course. I can
grow into it. Gosh. See, I love that at least now we're seeing Jean getting to cut loose just a little bit. Enough. Finally,
for him,
finally settling
he smiled.
In.
He smiled. That was.
And let's be honest. If there is any place that you can feel utterly at home, no matter who you are, it's the Kent farm. Or if you're Shiera, Mos Eisley.
I kind of like this alien world. It's pretty cool.
I mean, it does basically just look like New York on Christmas Eve.
But I do like the priorities. John wants to relax. She wants to celebrate. And
Which
she
means...
walks into the norm!
Yeah.
Oh my.
Welcome to an alien discotheque. This is where your teammate goes to blow off steam. Again, the grand holiday
High five.
Tradition. Getting drunk with your colleagues and learning whole new sides of
this
them.
This is what Christmas parties are for. And she's got her own nickname. So,
of
you
course.
Know, she's been there more than once. Chug, 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 chug. Now that's good blurb. Try this. It's great. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
John Stewart, I mean, he is a space cop, but in his heart, he's an earthling.
Yeah.
And drinking blurg with worms really just isn't...
Hey, it's not... He doesn't spend time at Josie's. He's not used to this kind of thing.
That is true. That is true. He's not there.
And, of course, what's the one thing that can make this night better? Bar fight!
The other thing that I think this speaks to is the potential issues of an introvert dating an extrovert.
Yeah.
I mean, it can work, but you have to make it work.
Because otherwise, New Year's Eve brawls
might be in your future. Fight. And we have the first punch thrown.
And back to Central City, where, of course, some nonsense is going down at the Flash Museum. Because it always is. Wow. Someone
sure did a number on this place. But you know, I hadn't even started. It's not a DC Christmas. Do you believe the horrendous... Until a talking ape appears. Hello, DC.
Yeah, basically.
Ultra Humanite. For the win.
Can I just say I actually really love Ultra Humanite as a concept because he's basically that guy from your 300 level art class.
He's a bit of a snob. Bit
yes.
of a snob. Self-important.
Not always wrong. I mean, granted, The ape does have good taste, but maybe not the best art critic.
but Flash was a little too fast for him.
As always. Oh no!
And the Ultra Humanite falls and destroys poor DJ Rubber Ducky. I broke your toy. It was a present for some kids who really wanted it. A paltry bit of plastic and crude electronics. They'd have been better off with a book. I suggest Voltaire. Don't you remember what it's like to have your heart set on something? And that awful feeling when you didn't get it? Yes.
Getting to have that holiday moment with the Ultra Humanite. Talk about the true meaning of Christmas. Forced jollity on every lip, instance of goodwill in every
heart. Tidings of comfort and joy. Episode title shout out. But we've got a talking ape with a heart of gold.
Well, yeah.
It's for the children.
At the end of the day, if it's for the children, well, maybe.
Except his first act for the children is to clock Flash.
Well, wham, yeah. Bam. I mean, we're working towards Heart of Gold.
Yes, yes, okay. But,
again, another grand tradition. The rogues pitching in.
Yes.
When the cards really are on the table, they're down to help.
Because, I mean, what was the Ultra Humanite doing? He was in an abandoned, he was in a closed museum on a holiday destroying art. It's a crime. It's a property crime.
But he wasn't hurting anyone.
And in his mind, he was helping them. And, back in Smallville. Poor sad Jean. Staring out the window. Phasing through the house.
Going on walkabout.
Mom, Pa, you didn't tell me this was going to be a kissing episode.
Of course it's a kissing episode. Clark still trying to creep on his presents, even though he is a grown man.
Why are you looking at me like that? What are you saying? I don't get it. And Smallville, of course, perfectly decorated. As a perfect American small town.
So if we have the Ultra Humanite and the goodwill towards others, gift giving, and all of that as sort of a true meaning of Christmas, then we have in Smallville the friends and family and home as the true meaning of Christmas. But of course, Jean still doesn't feel like he really fits in.
Right. Just you wait. And then John hears the magic word. Cookie.
Well,
he hears the magic word cookie.
So he goes to spread.
He alights to the roof. Uh-oh.
Yeah. To spread a little holiday magic for a little girl in Smallville.
Phases through the reach down the chimney.
Oreos. And Midnight Mass.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I like that back in Smallville for the Christmas episode. It is a religious Christmas carol. You know, they could have easily done something else. Nice stained glass church there. Not to get all Dorkness to light on us.
Right. But I do like the variety of holidays that are celebrated. Mm-hmm. Be it quiet with friends and family, whether it be loud with friends and enemies.
Back to the Christmas brawl. You know, because back in with Flash and the Ultra Humanite, we have the tradition of the Christmas truce.
Mm-hmm.
And now here we have the Christmas brawl in Planet Miscellaneous War World B. John makes the mistake of asking one of the best warriors in the universe
if she needs backup. The answer is no.
Wham bam. Guard let down. And
yeah.
That guy's big, ugly, and mean.
I won't wear it. Oh, come on. I'm wearing the beard. You don't want to scare the kids, do you? The indignity.
And here we have our Scrooge.
Santa Flash.
Our Scrooge on Christmas Day.
flashy claws and the biggest, ugliest elf ever.
You sure it won't, you know? Oh, for heaven's sake.
No. I did not wire this to be a bomb.
I did not turn it into a bomb.
Although he did improve it.
I'll tell you a story.
Is that DJ Rubber Ducky? He sounds weird.
Well,
first of all, many of us have been disappointed by the hot toys, so.
Yeah, so it's only fair. At least this one just recites the Nutcracker.
Wouldn't you say? It's an improvement, wouldn't you say?
When he made the poopy noise. That night as Clara slept beneath. But the kids seem to be enjoying it.
Rapt attention, so.
So we're gonna call that a Christmas miracle all around.
It's a classic. It's improvements to the toy.
And now.
So Flash did like the poopy sounds.
Yes. And unfortunately, Ultra Human Knight does have to go to prison
for
his crimes.
But Flash is waiting for him.
And he brought him a Christmas tree.
Sure, but I thought you might like some holiday cheer yourself.
Aww, and a tree for the rogue. And we talked about Flash. I'm just saying, is Superman bringing Luthor a Christmas tree? Wonder Woman bringing Giganta? Okay, she actually might. Wonder Woman's nice
maybe.
Enough. That might be the exception.
But that is
this is a
that
total
is, that
Flash,
is Flash
thing. This is Flash and the Rogues.
Just top to bottom is, yeah, you have to go to prison, but, you know, pay for your crimes. But here's a little holiday cheer.
Oh,
hi.
They work
Thank
together.
You. We work together. Help the kids. And back on War World B, everyone has passed out in a giant drunken cuddle pile.
Wait a minute. Is she going to kiss? She kissed him on the cheek. There's another kiss.
And there's some smooching. She got her Christmas present. A big old fight with her boyfriend.
And what's the result? Peace. They're happy. They're calm. They're passed out drunk. But still, I'm counting it as peace.
It's true. And then Christmas Eve, Clark, like the literal 12-year-old boy that he is, leaping out of bed, putting on his robe.
It has been established much that Superman does not need to sleep. But I think on Christmas Eve, he does. There's no doubt that he's not faking. He is sleeping.
And our final Christmas present, a song from Jean. With the cat sleeping on
Stroking
his lap.
Stroking Streaky the cat, because he's made a friend. He has made a friend. Here's the thing about this episode. It's awesome.
Yeah, just
it
all
holds
around.
Up, start to finish. I was taking my notes, talking to your mom about what we were doing, come up with this idea, and she kept saying, when are you going to watch Come From the Joy? When are you going to? Because I evidently was not allowed to watch it by myself.
Oh, no. Absolutely
I had to watch
not.
It. It's a family Christmas. Watch it with your mom. Watching it with you now. So
as it should
I was
be.
Not allowed to watch it on my own. No. That was against the rules.
Every year, I think for at least the last 4 or 5 years, Mom and I have made that a necessity of the Christmas season. And you don't always join us. Sometimes you're off, you know, making wassail or what have you. But every year, we got to sit down and watch Comfort and Joy.
It is. It's awesome.
It's a classic.
So that is our holiday season's greetings, Christmas present to you all. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope that your holiday season is joyous and filled with love and comfort and joy.
Yes. So, Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Blessed Yule, Gene Hendricks. And a happy holidays.
And a happy new year.
Happy new year to everyone listening. If you have any comments on this episode or our other episodes, feel free to email us at relativelygeeky@gmail.com.
Or you can make a comment on the Facebook or blog post for this episode at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this. We are sure there were many details and exciting and interesting parts of the episode, Easter eggs and other things that went by that we did not comment on. But that's okay. We're not experts.
We're just family.
Even Jan and Stack had trouble making a rage monster.
Try that again. You can email us. That's okay. I almost said darkness to light. Or you could You know what? Let's just go with the first one. Because I'm not going to do it any better than that.